According to your experience, and considering that that Toronto is a multicultural city, of course, maybe one of the most multicultural cities in the world, how is your experience with students here? Do they welcome or reject students from abroad?
So first of all, let's just talk a little bit about multiculturalism in Canada to help us sort of to answer that question. Canada has an official multicultural policy that really speaks to sort of the melting pot approach where immigrants and people of color, and mainly immigrants, can find themselves within the Canadian society. However, there has been critique of that policy because many feel that it doesn't address the tensions, particularly around race and racism that exists within Canada, within this sort of broad multicultural policy and multiculturalism, so to speak. So that is an ongoing conversation, and critical scholars have, including myself, have pointed to that. Nonetheless, I think that if the question you're asking is how do students with different languages, immigrants to Canada, do they feel welcome within the school? I would say that, and I can only speak to Ontario because that's my experience. I would say that as an overall, multiculturalism and the multicultural policy provides a space where that work can happen. Does that mean that students who are coming into Canada do not feel in some ways that their lived experiences are not valued and validated? We see this all the time where immigrants will say that because of their accents or their name or maybe or something other aspect of identity, they do not feel as included. I know that some school boards have a welcoming center where they support immigrants. I also know that the former government actually had a policy called the Ontario Equity and Inclusive Strategy, and within that acknowledged that newcomers to Canada has a space and must be included, and that teachers and educators must ensure that they create a positive learning environment where students who might not speak the language, might not understand the customs, can feel welcome, can feel safe, and can actually engage in learning. But that's one thing. I think also if we should speak to students who are, you know, immigrants, as you've asked, come into Canada, they will share experiences of feeling that they experience racism, they experience rejection and exclusion in many forms based on different aspects of their identity. You know, that loaded question that people sometimes ask, where are you from? Mm-hmm. And by asking that question, it signals that somehow you don't belong. So I think there's lots of work to be done in that area.
Okay. What about the two different school boards? Because at some point I was thinking, like, what happened with immigrants that are not Catholic? So they must be fit in the other school board, and it doesn't matter anything else. It's just like that could create segregation or racism or something.
I don't know that the analysis is. I think, let me say, the analysis is far more complex than that. Mm-hmm. However, as you well know, within Ontario, the way the school system is set up, the public school system, and that's all I can speak to, the public school system, where I was a former teacher and school administrator for close to 18 years and have been in education for 27 years. You know, it's built on a system of the separate school being Catholic and the public education. However, over time, funding, particularly at the secondary level, you know, has come from the public purse in taxes and so on to support both systems. And many educators and many in the community, community members have been asking, maybe it's time to revisit this distinction between Catholic boards and public boards. And I think that's an ongoing debate. There are also other schools, we know private schools and other religious schools that speak to the needs of students and particularly around aspects of their identities and the way that their families and communities values that they wish them to learn that they believe are not present in the public school system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you know, so Ontario has a public school system and it has a private school system. I think it doesn't matter in the public school system, wherever you go, I think there will be ways in which students have told us that they feel excluded, whether it is in the Catholic board or in the public board, or we say separate school board. Students and families have told us over and over again that they feel excluded, their identities are not well represented, whether it's curriculum, in the teaching pedagogy, in terms of their overall experiences within the school system, whether it's language, whether it is their religion, whether it is race, socioeconomics, all of those are intersecting aspects of our identity. And many students will tell us, it doesn't matter what board they're in the public education, that there are aspects of inclusion that we must work on. We see what's happening right now around issues of anti-Black racism, where Black folks have said it's time that we recognize that there is racism towards Black people that feels different, looks different, and that we must address.
Exactly. I am also thinking about two different things or aspects. First of all, I know, of course, my background is Latin. I'm from Mexico, and I know a lot of people from Latin America here in Toronto. And many adults who have children have told me that some of their children, when they reach the teenage years, for example, some of them reject their background. They underestimate their cultural background. How can we help them, or what can we do to avoid that? Because I think that it's just like a matter of, I'm not from Latin America, I prefer to be Canadian or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's a very interesting, and that really is rooted in what is grounded within and sort of foregrounded within the education system. So number one, the education system, many would argue, does not reflect or encourage or the cultural identity of many students. And so oftentimes what families and feel that they need to do in order to fit in order to become part of, in order to feel like they have to be accepted, they tend to want to reject their culture in order to be part of something that they see as the advantage on one side. And, you know, Gloria Ladson-Billings and Geneva Gay, well-known Black scholars, theorize the whole notion of culturally responsive and culturally relevant pedagogy that they believe should be a foundation in terms of creating inclusion where students do not have to reject their culture. And what they talk about culture as fluid, and that teaching curriculum and pedagogy should include students' identities where they feel connected. And I'm going to just quote a few other scholars, Moll and Amanti. They talked about funds of knowledge, where they say that schools should draw on and rely on and build on the knowledge at home and in communities, and use that to support students while they're in school. So students would not feel that they have to reject their background in order to fit into the dominant narrative or the dominant discourse, which often, as you know, is white supremacy. It that foregrounds Eurocentric ways of being and knowing, and some students and some families buy into that notion of meritocracy. They buy into, you know, white supremacy doctrine unknowingly or knowingly. And of course, because that's a dominant discourse and everyone is trying to find advantage for their children, they're thinking, this is what I need to do to get ahead. But it should not be that way. No one should have to reject their background, reject their culture, reject their identity, reject all of their, what makes them human. Mm-hmm. In order to fit into any other society. We come into this world as who we are, and who we are in all of our various aspects should be part of our educational experience and should be part of the teaching and learning process. It's a long journey, and we have to support teachers. Some are doing it, some are doing it, but we have to work with teachers to do that better.
Maybe this could be like a philosophical question, but it's really in my mind. this, how did we get this idea of being different is bad? Being from anywhere else but from here is something bad. How did it happen?
It happens, that is an outgrowth of white supremacy, where everything that's normal is constructed around whiteness. That is how, that's been from over 400 years. It's not, or even more than that. The day the settlers arrived and took the land from indigenous people, we have been on that trajectory, where in North America and in other spaces, white dominance and white supremacy really begin to normalize their way of thinking, their way of knowing, their way of being, and position that as the norm. So if you look on the TV, that's what you see. If you go to school, all the positions of leadership, that's what you see. If you go on an airplane, if you go to business, if you look on all of the leaders of the world in the Western world, when they get together, that's what you see, then that is positioned as normal. And that is what white supremacy has done for all these years. And for a long time, scholars have been trying to disrupt that, to disrupt the white supremacy, the norms that they've created for all of non-white people, Black, indigenous people of color, to fit into. And so now, with the social movement garnered by young people and others and so on, people are beginning to understand what white supremacy is all about in greater details, you know, and understand in a real way. So that's how this has happened. That is all because white supremacy, whiteness, all of that, Eurocentric values have been positioned as the norm.
When this whole thing about George Floyd and many other cases in many different parts of the world, even in Latin America or Africa or everywhere, happens, that those protests could help us to make a real change? Or it's just like, oh, we're protesting right now, and maybe in a couple of weeks, maybe we're going to forget it. Do you think that it could change something?
So I'm, as a person by nature, I, of course, my grandmother was very influential in my life, and there are some values that have grounded me of hope, positive energy, positive beliefs, and so that grounds me and guides me. But, you know, we have seen social unrest before in the 60s. You know, I'm originally from Jamaica, even though my last name is Lopez, I'm originally from Jamaica. And, you know, so my ancestors have rebelled. They rebelled against slavery, you know, my ancestors. So, and change came. This time, I believe that with the movement being so global, with the intersectionalities, with different people who have been oppressed by various aspects of their identities, this time I am hopeful that a shift has occurred, and that we must not be complacent. We must not take our eyes off the ball, because we cannot have window dressing. We cannot have organizations making statements. We have to hold organizations, education, and the system accountable for the change. So we have to ensure that actions come from the activism. It's so important, because white supremacy is not going to give up just like that. Mm-hmm. You know, we see it all the time. I'm receiving trolls and you know, online, and resistors and others have been receiving those as well. We see what's happening in the United States. So yes, I am very hopeful, just because of the intersectionality of different people coming together. It's global, and young people are driving this. So somehow I feel, and also this awareness building that's happening, I am very hopeful, but we have to keep our eyes focused to ensure that the real change comes and it's not just cosmetic.
Okay, and what can we do? Because we have to act in different levels at the same time, right? So what can we do with our family, with our children, and me, for example, as part of Latin American community? What can we do at an individual level?
And, you know, I'm just going to share from my own experience, my own thinking, my own grounding as a Black woman, as a Jamaican who's been doing anti-racist work and anti-Black racism work for a very long time in different spaces. I always believe that what we can do begins with our own self, our own critical consciousness, beginning to think about what it is that I believe, what it is that I believe about the world, what it is that I believe about other people who do not look like me. What is it that I believe about systems that drive society? And then begin to think about what do I need to learn and what do I need to unlearn? And I think everybody's at a different place with that. So I think within our families now, I think the most important thing I'm doing with my grandchildren and my daughter is to have that conversation around ensuring that they are grounded in their own identity, the history and knowledge of our ancestors, and then begin to think about how, where do we connect with others who have different experiences, because this is intersectional, you know. I'm not just Black, I'm gendered as well, and there might be other aspects of my identity. So that's where I think we begin, and I think we can teach our children in our homes how to have that critical consciousness, how teach them what racism looks like. It's not just an organizing concept. It looks like something. It feels like something, and begin to have that conversation when in families. So that's where I think it begins.
It's not only like, oh, please don't be racist. By saying that, you don't fix anything.
No, we don't. And we have to, racism is about power. And you know, it is about understanding how people are impacted. As educators, we speak all the time, at least I do. It's impact, not intent. So if someone tells you that they're in pain, it's not for you to deconstruct how much pain they're feeling. It's for you to understand why that pain and begin to validate other people's experiences. But I think in Canada, we've had a hard time naming racism as a problem. And if we cannot name it, we cannot fix it. So I think what's happening now, I think as a country, we're beginning to become more comfortable to name racism. And also as a country, as an immigrant, we're beginning to recognize everyone that we've got to also learn and know about indigenous people who were here before the settlers and the colonizers came, and that we're all living on their land. And that is also part of what has to be in the curriculum, part of what has to be in education, and see how our common interests intersect. The interest of Black people, the interest of other people of color, indigenous people, we've got to begin to work together and see how our interests connect in order to create the lasting sustainable change that we're all looking for.